Blog Talk Radio.
Paul and his retirement from our Congress. I wanted to read a little bit something to you tonight. I try to read every night out of my scripture, my Bible. I don't always get that accomplished. More times than not, I don't, and I need to. I think all of us need to spend more time doing that. Last night when I laid down in bed and opened the book to read, this was the page that I came to, and I just thought it was, well, I thought it was really appropriate to what we have going on today, so bear with me as I read this for you. And it's out of Ecclesiastes chapter 9. Dead flies putrefy the perfumer's ointment and cause it to give off a foul odor. So does a little folly to one respected for wisdom and honor. A wise man's heart is at his right hand, but a fool's heart at his left. Even when a fool walks along the way, he lacks wisdom, and he shows everyone that he is a fool. If the spirit of the ruler rises against you, do not leave your post, for conciliation pacifies great offenses. You know, that really goes with the theme of what I've been talking about on this show for a long time. Conciliation pacifies great offenses. In other words, when you consent, you pacify those who are doing offensive things. And isn't that what we've been doing as a country for many, many decades now? We have been giving conciliation. We have been conceding to those acts which are contrary to the contract or the charter that created the very government that is committing these offenses. And they are greatly pacified, are they not? It certainly would seem that they are. One of the first things I wanted to get to, of course, you know, the thing that's on everyone's mind of late has been, of course, the government shutdown. And I wanted to put a link in here that I ran across. And basically what the article is describing in this link is that apparently Senate Democrats could introduce legislation as soon as today that gives Barack Obama the authority to raise the debt ceiling unless two-thirds of Congress disapprove. Let's see. According to this, that the Democrats have been pressing for a year since the nation's debt ceiling was increased. This method came about, wouldn't you know it, it was first proposed by Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell in 2011 and became part of the Budget Control Act passed in August of that year. So apparently there is a provision in the Budget Control Act that was passed by Congress and signed by Obama in 2011 that would allow Obama to raise the debt ceiling by a vote, of course, and in order to not have the increase, two-thirds of the Congress would have to vote against it. And this was Mitch McConnell's idea? Okay, I'll go back to that foolishness in Ecclesiastes. Wow. I'm just simply not going to descend into the gutter and describe out of my mouth what I think about McConnell, and especially in light of this little revelation. The other side of that is, if this is accurate, if it will pass constitutional muster, if you will, then what are we doing? Why the charade game with this government shutdown, no shutdown? And the childish behavior of our commander-in-chief over shutting down some of the most inane operations that aren't even government operations in many cases. It's just absolutely asinine, the behavior of these people that are supposed to be our elected representatives, but we already know who they represent, and it's certainly not we the people. Now, I don't normally do this. I don't like to read articles, mine or someone else's, on the radio. because it just tends to get kind of tedious. But I ran across this today. And as I read it, I just felt the anger welling up inside me. And I really felt the urge to sit down and pen a response. But I recognize, of course, that doing so is an act in futility. So I just thought I'd share with you this article, which there are some points in the article that I 100% agree with. Unfortunately, it rests upon a foundation of ignorance, which I can't agree with. The title of the article is "The World Watches as the American Democracy Breathes Its Last." And we can start with that democracy and go from there. "The people of the world watch in awe and amazement at what is happening." I agree with that. "In and to America. They are watching as the self-proclaimed greatest democracy in the history of the world is imploding right before their eyes. They see a country that has lost its vision and its stability, weighed down by a government that is no longer capable of governing." So far, pretty good, except for the repeated democracy garbage. We can 86 that, but otherwise, I'm all there. "Yes, this is the same America that never tires of making it known to the world that it is the greatest democracy in history, one with a government that has been working tirelessly to spread it across this planet, whether other nations want it or not, often by the use of aggressive military force." So far, so good. "The demise of this, quote, model of democracy must be truly shocking. Turn of events for many nations who are tired of the hubris and bullying, it would seem to be a very welcome example of poetic justice." Again, so far, so good. Oh, I'll get to that in a minute, Miss Linda, who wrote the article. "If America has, in fact, lost its democracy, then what will replace it? That question has already been answered. The fact is that this nation has already evolved into a full-fledged corporatocracy, an economic and political system controlled by corporations or corporate interests. The masters of corporatism have used their unlimited, unrestrained money and power to take command of the government. In military terms, it might be called a bloodless coup. Their number one objective has been to completely paralyze the government and neuter its primary functions. The main sub-objectives include the total destruction of the Affordable Care Act." Okay, this is where we start to go off the rails just a bit. "And any and all social programs, the removal of all restrictions on Wall Street and the corporate world, the watering down of water and air pollution safeguards. They have suffocated the government's involvement in the creation of jobs." We could only pray for such a thing as that. "In effect, they are working within the government to destroy the functions of government, and they have succeeded brilliantly. A good example of how this transformation from a democracy to corporatocracy has been accomplished can be evidenced by the fact that we are currently in the midst of a national crisis as the shutdown of government continues and a debt ceiling crisis looms on the horizon," the writer says. "If we still had a strong, viable democracy, this kind of crisis would never have occurred. But we don't, and so this is what happens." Boy, this guy is some piece of work, I got to tell you. And I hope that you're not falling asleep down there just yet. And I hope that your eyeballs aren't ready to burst out of your head. Because it gets way, way better from here. "The way that this Congress now functions is diametrically opposed to that of what the Founding Fathers had originally envisioned." Well, yes, I can agree with that, in part because of that stupid 16th and 17th Amendment, along with the 14th Amendment, but we won't digress into that.
It's so very inept and useless that it's almost hilarious, and it reminds me of the time I heard an analyst on a cable news show use a reference from a 1970s song by Stephen Sondheim. He said, she said, in joking about this, some governmental issue, they should send in the clowns. But the other host stopped her and said, they're already here, sitting in the chambers of the House and the Senate. I couldn't agree more. And if you doubt that this is a fair and accurate assessment of the situation, what about the fact that we currently have a real clown, the Speaker of the House, one individual out of 535 members of Congress who evidently has the power to single-handedly shut down the government and hold the people of America hostage until and unless he gets his way and is allowed to destroy Obamacare? Only in America. What a country. Now, I'm sorry, I thought there were other members of Congress involved in this shutdown. Ladies and gentlemen, perhaps I've overlooked something. In fact, it seems to me that the House, where all bills for appropriations must originate, let's see, I thought that they had sent some bills to the Senate, and the Senate had rejected them, won't even allow a vote on them. So that seems to me that there must be some cooperation in this shutdown. And that's really what's going on here, is it not? I mean, certainly, does anyone out there believe that it's one single individual, whether it be Barack Obama or whether it be John Boehner, that is holding America hostage? I mean, clearly, if we look at what has been going on in the United States of America for the last 80 years, it would seem to me that there's been a whole train of people holding America hostage. And yes, we are a constitutional republic with a democratic form of government. Democratic government meaning that they vote for majority to pass bills. We understand that. So anyway, without digressing too far, you know, this writer goes just off the rails in a couple of things that comprise the entire body of this article. And I wanted to continue on. Yes, we have a lot of clowns in this Congress, but what they are doing is really not funny. They have effectively torn down our fragile democracy, which is now hanging by a thread. They act as if the Constitution is, as G.W. Bush once allegedly stated, it's just a gosh danged piece of paper. To many of these pseudo-lawmakers, it's just that. And the oath that they took when they entered office, that I do solemnly swear or affirm that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States, is nothing more than a mechanical statement, and that means absolutely nothing. Well, I agree with that. I think a vast majority of them see the Constitution as nothing but fodder. And I think that cuts both sides out. But here's where I really have to start taking some exception. And this is where another place where this writer could use a little comprehension. And while we are talking about changing some of the terms that no longer seem to fit the America of today, should we consider making a change in the name? United States of America. The word united is defined as a single entity, people working together to achieve a common goal, something inseparable. Is that what we see going on in America, as the red and blue states have almost nothing in common, and quite visibly their separate congressional members are continuously trying to undermine each other? And thinking of why this Senate is in such turmoil and disarray, one reason And Rod, you're going to like this, because this is why I say we need to bring back the 17th Amendment. And thinking of why this Senate is in such turmoil and disarray, one reason is that the tiny, relatively inconsequential states of Alabama and Mississippi, with a combined population of about 8 million, have a total of 4 senators. While those of New York and California, huge and dynamic states with a population of nearly 57 million, also have only 4 senators. That's not representative democracy. That's ludicrous. And it's one of the main reasons why that body of government can't extract itself from its state of perpetual gridlock. Boy, howdy. Really? You see, this is the mentality. And this is why the argument continues over democracy or a constitutional republic. What the progressives want to push is this ideology of a pure democracy, majority rule in all cases. They want to pretend that the Constitution really doesn't regulate much. It's just kind of a guideline, and it's all about how you interpret it in today's language. Because after all, we know that it's a living, breathing document. And the meaning of the words that are encapsulated in that document expand and contract with the ebb and flow of the changing tides of the times. That's certainly what they would like to believe. And that's why they want to alter it inexorably. They want the big, huge, dynamic, important states, you know, the ones where people are piled on top of one another, just like in the big cities in Europe. Yes, those are the ones where government does its best work, where government pays the biggest dividends, the best investment return for those that don't want to invest too much time and effort. What a total crock of horse manure this article is. And I mean, this guy actually graduated from college in my home state of Illinois, and served in the military. And I'm thinking that he must be suffering from PTSD, even though I didn't know that was possible. He had to have been a cook or something. Wow. We want to talk about divisions. The world watches as the massive divisions between the government and the people of America grow ever deeper and wider. As the emergence of a police state becomes more apparent each and every day, as the once famous American dream turns into a nightmare, they see a once proud nation of creative individuals lapse into a state of decay and decline. You know, that's very true and very perceptive. And this article is by Mr. Michael Payne, P-A-Y-N-E. You know, and I agree with the descending into a police state. And I posited the question on Mikey B's show, The Hot Seat, on Saturday. When we talk about the police state and the escalation of violence against the citizens, you know, there used to be a time when a couple of people that come to mind that have been labeled as race pimps, Jesse Jackson and the Reverend Al Sharpton, would be up in arms and whipping the locals into a frenzy whenever a young black man was gunned down by the police. You know, it was the man trying to keep folks down. But yet, we see a young woman, from all apparent information, mentally deficient. She had some severe mental issues, gunned down in our nation's capital by a gaggle of police officers, armed officers. And while we can certainly agree that a crazy female, or just about any female, behind the wheel of an automobile, sorry ladies, I couldn't resist, certainly can pose a threat to public safety, I think we can also all agree that once the vehicle has been stopped and rendered immobile, in other words, she was boxed in and could not move, not an inch forward, not an inch backwards, to then fatally shoot this unarmed female, well, you know, that just kind of goes above and beyond. And I was thoroughly disgusted at the standing ovation that was given out by our Senate at the culmination of this event. And, you know, the question I asked is, if instead of Secret Service agents and Capitol Police, if this woman had endangered some citizen and his family, and he had been a concealed carry weapons permit holder, and he had pulled his weapon and shot this woman, ending her threat to his family and his safety, do you think, ladies and gentlemen, that the news reports, that the news media would be treating this story the same way? Would the Senate, would the Senate have given that citizen a standing ovation? And Cal, I hear what you're saying, but I don't believe, from what I've seen, that a single officer was struck by that car. In fact, I know that no officer was struck by the car. That is something that the police have used in the past and continue to use as an excuse to just absolutely unload on someone in a vehicle. I'm simply making, and maybe that's true, I don't believe they had a right to shoot an unarmed individual when that individual was subdued. Okay? That's what I'm talking about. Because they did not shoot the woman until after her car was pinned against a barricade with a Suburban up against the left front fender, another police cruiser up against the rear bumper, and another police cruiser to the right of the vehicle. That car could go nowhere. She could not move an inch in any direction. After that happened, they piled out of their vehicles and then shot her. And I'm sorry, but if that were a citizen or a group of citizens that had done that, they would all be facing murder charges. And the point is that we allow our police to do things that citizens would be punished for. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is a double standard. And that should not exist in this country. It should not exist in a free country. The police should not have the right authority or be given carte blanche to do what a citizen would go to prison for. I'm sorry. You can try to justify it a million different ways, but you cannot justify it. Government, in and of itself, is a concept. It's an idea. They did have her pinned. After they had her pinned is when they shot her. Look, we can argue procedures. I agree. You know, it is what it is. It's happened. But that's not my point. My point is that we have gone off the rails of common sense, completely off the rails of common sense. And if there is a separate set of rules for citizens and a separate set of rules for government and government actors, we have a big problem. And that certainly seems to be the case. My other point is, this lady was a black lady. She was a woman of color. Where is the outrage from Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, and the other race pimps? That's what I'm saying. We've got more than a double standard. We've got a triple and sometimes four-tier standard. We've got one standard for people who are here illegally and are not citizens. We've got another standard for government employees. We've got another standard for elected officials. And if you're a taxpayer, you are on the bottom rung of the standards. You are the one that you might as well have your pants pulled down around your ankles, your hands tied to a post, and you stuck out in the middle of the public square. Because that's exactly how I, as a taxpayer, feel every time government is in session, whether it's at the state capitol or in Washington, D.C. So we've got to look at what the hell have we become as a nation? Truly, what have we become? You know, what do you think, Mr. Robert?
Well, Ron, let us be going to Michigan right now, because I just heard today that you can practice law as an illegal alien in California.
Yeah, I believe I saw a little bit of that.
Oh, man. You know, this government shut down. It happened on my birthday, by the way. The government shut down on my birthday.
You're a curse, Robert.
That was the happiest birthday of my entire career of living.
Well, I would say it is something to celebrate, but, you know, just the response, not the manner in which our government, the administration, that is the executive branch of our government, is responding or conducting this so-called shutdown.
I mean, Mitch McConnell, this guy.
It's absolutely disgusting. It's beyond disgusting.
So what are your views now? Do you think Dr. Paul's son is just a part of it? Do you think he's with Mitch McConnell? Or do you think he's...
Why, because of the little chatter on the open mic?
Yeah.
No, I think that was... I think what you caught there was two senators from Kentucky going over, holding the line, and not stepping on their words, you know. Mm-hmm. And what Rand said was, yeah, you know, I just came out of an interview with CNN, and I told them, you know, we're willing to negotiate. And I think that's the way forward, and that's how we win this, is by not moving off the line that we're willing to negotiate, and it's the president and the Democrats who are not willing. And I think he's absolutely correct. I mean, that was just a little bit of inside baseball. I think Doc's correct. Rand is very pragmatic and knows how the game is played. I think that's absolutely accurate. It's sad that it had to come to this, but, you know, and I keep waiting for one of these guys to stand up and start really putting some heat on the quote-unquote other side and say, you know, look, guys, it's time we stand up and take responsibility. Every Congress before us, since Andrew Jackson, has kicked the can down the road. Well, the problem is now we've come to a wall, and every time we kick the can, it bounces back and hits us.
Well, that's an issue that I have problems with, Ron. I mean, you know, if they let that guy raise a dead silly with a clear slate, I mean, that's
well. You're not seeing the article that I put up, but apparently, back in 2011, when they had the sequestration and the budget increase, as
right.
part of the Budget Control Act passed in August of 2011, it seems that they added something in the legislation that would allow Obama to increase the debt ceiling without a vote unless 2/3 of the members of Congress voted against it or were opposed to it.
Well, did the Senate vote on it today? I mean, I heard they were going to vote on it today. Did it get out?
I've not heard anything about a Senate vote. The last information I heard is they haven't done a damn thing, and we don't believe they're going to up until the 17th and beyond. So,
what I don't understand, Ron, is this damn Senate has not passed a budget since Obama's term in office, and I don't get it anymore.
Look, there's a million different reasons why. You could go forward and say, well, of course they didn't pass a budget. I mean, let me start to recount the reasons why. Number one, if you don't have a budget, you can't say you're over budget, and therefore you don't necessarily have a budget deficit. You can't say that you've been foolish in your spending because we didn't outspend the budget because we didn't have a budget. So there were no budgetary constraints. And you're also setting a precedent now that Congress operating on a budget is really an old-fashioned notion. Number four, if you know for certain that there's going to be a monetary realignment globally and that there's going to be some debt forgiveness globally, why in the hell would you limit yourself with a budget? Why would you do that? Why tie your hands? And you've got the Federal Reserve. You got the Federal Reserve saying, you know, this whole notion of a debt ceiling is ridiculous. And they're all trying to get this to center around an argument over the 14th Amendment and the language in the 14th Amendment. The language in the 14th Amendment was a reiteration of the language that was in the original Constitution. The original Constitution validated all the war debt of the Revolutionary War and placed it all on the federal government, not on the individual states. The 14th Amendment did the same thing for all of the war debts surrounding the Civil War. Now, the court has ruled on this in the past, back in 1935, and wouldn't you know it, the liberal Supreme Court under FDR, well, they expanded the scope of that language to encompass all government debt going forward into perpetuity, not just the war debt. And so now we have this new idea, this new authority granted under the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, which was actually a very narrow and focused amendment that was designed to grant citizenship to freed slaves, to lay to rest once and for all the idea that there had to be equal application of the law. And here we go. We're making this crap up as they go along. And I want to cut in because I've got Miss Linda on the line with us, and I don't want to leave her hanging. How are you, Miss Linda?
Pretty good. How's everything going? Hi, Robert. Wanted to explain what I had gone through last week prior to Mikey B's show, and I got, you know, waylaid. But I was actually, it wasn't just for partying sake. I did get some contacts from my catering, so that was another deal. But what had happened, I believe, Friday in California. See, there's a stack of evil liberal bills put forth by the Democrat majority in Sacramento, put on his desk to sign, and some of them are horrible draconian gun laws, which the NRA has threatened to sue if he does it. I hope they do. The other one was this AB4, which is like 8 different tiers to it, a very horrible, literally blanket amnesty in the state of California is what it comes down to. What he's done, and he's done it, he passed it. We've tried to melt the phone lines, but it doesn't matter. He's Mussolini, so he can do whatever the hell he wants. And, I mean, that's what he reminds me of. He's just evil. You know, he says, well, I'm not going to wait for Congress. He says, I'm going to do it for my state, you know. No, he's just got the whole place, amnesty, sanctuary state, you know. There's going to be no reporting to ICE. There's going to be no deportation. These people can serve on juries and be lawyers. It's nuts. I mean, he just did it. It's just with a sweep of a pen, this is what's going on here. I can't. The only recourse that we have that I see right now in this state is to get the hell out of it. I'm serious. It's that bad. You know.
Let me tell you. I want to read you a brief little excerpt. This should make you. This should make you feel so much better. And this is a quote from another article. There is a desire felt by tens of millions of Americans, lumped into a diffuse and fractious movement known as the Christian right, to destroy the intellectual and scientific rigor of the Enlightenment, radically diminish the role of government to create a theocratic state based on biblical law, and force a recalcitrant world to bend to the will of an imperial and Christian America.
Oh, wow. Who wrote that? What fool wrote
that?
These
people are absolutely whack jobs.
They're nuts. Do they not read anything? We don't have a theocracy. We never have, and we're not supposed to.
No, they're saying that's what the Christian right wants, is to create a theocracy.
Oh, BS. Oh, so
you know, this
for
is 237
years. Yeah, so for 237
years. He's going to be in your neck of the woods. Well, kind of in your neck of the woods.
Oh, my God. So for all this time since the ratification of the Constitution way, way back, why hasn't it occurred then? Why is there like 14% of the crazy nutjob atheists making all the noise and getting all the attention? I mean, please. It's the same thing
with
a stupid...
Linda, you need... Oh, God, you need to go to this thing, I'm telling you. The event, Chris Hedges is the guy's name, The Myth of Human Progress and the Collapse of Complex Societies, Sunday, October 13th, Santa Monica Bay Woman's Club, Santa Monica, California.
Oh, no. No, I'd be arrested, so I'm staying home. I'll hang out in Oceanside. Thank you so much. Oh, no, I'm fit to be tied already. I mean, I'm drinking wine.
Look here, I would, out of my own pocket, buy you the limited Golden Circuit premier seating plus admission to the reception $100 ticket to attend that event.
Oh, my God,
I would absolutely.
No, you'd have to come there to watch me explode, and then that would be worth the price of admission, I'm sure. But,
I don't know if they'd let me
God.
Into the women's club. That's true.
Of course, I don't have a really good camcorder. Look,
well,
they've got
Santa Monica. They might all be a little more butch than I am.
Oh, Lord. That'll make me crazy. Yeah, we've got, less than 2% of the population, what I call the gay mafia. And they're out, you know, they're screaming. Of course, California's turned into the land of Sodom and Gomorrah, the whole damn thing. I have no hope for this state at all. None. I mean,
you know,
it's sick.
Linda, if you had an old wig, you could cut some patches off of it and glue it under your arms and then, you know, make some stubble and put it on your legs. You'd probably fit in pretty good that way.
Oh, my God, that's funny. Oh, Lord.
Yeah, and Doc's right. I could just wear a dress and probably walk right in. It is California.
Yeah, because you have now the gender identity, and you can choose your bathroom, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Geez. Oh, God.
Wow.
My head's going to spin off this thing. Well, what the other thing we were, you know, you're talking about this look, we, again, you've got people picking winners and losers. You've got central economic planning, although the, some semblance of the free market still works, or we'd all be standing in line for toilet paper at this point, which is, that's what's next if they get their way. I mean, it's not good, you know. But when I was learning in the Econ 101 from Hillsdale today about the free markets, and then he did mention in the Q&A session about the debt limit, he says, look, he says if they did not raise at this time the debt limit, we would not immediately go into default. We already have that money set for paying the interest on the debt each month and all these things, and everything's funded right now. But then you have
yeah,
then you have
go
to both. You have to go to like 10 to 14 years from now if you do not restructure those huge entitlement programs, like, of course, Obamacare will just put the nail in the coffin, but the other two that have been around for eons, because people don't like to give them up once they're implemented, which is another problem. But if you don't restructure that whole mess, yeah, you will default because the whole thing's going to blow up. I mean, even if we got that far.
He was being
optimistic, of course, and level-headed like a Thomas Sowell or a von Mises.
I do not know why every member of Congress that's against raising the debt limit does not have this tattooed on their frickin' palm of their hand and read it back to every one of these talking monkeys on the damn TV shows when they go on there. It's disgusting to see how in the tank the talking morons are on these news supposed news shows. Increasing America's debt weakens us domestically and internationally. Leadership means that the buck stops here. Instead, Washington is shifting the burden of bad choices today onto the backs of our children and grandchildren. America has a debt problem and a failure of leadership. Americans deserve better. I therefore intend to oppose the effort to increase America's debt limit. Barack Obama, March 16th, 2006.
Oh, my God.
I would parrot that every single freaking time
single
I got
time.
In front of a microphone.
Yeah, the guys here on the west, the left coast, like Roger Hedgecock, they say it all the time on the radio shows. Unfortunately, I don't know how much syndication is going out across the land on this one, but that's
they
what I hear.
Absolutely. Wear that out.
Oh, yeah. They should have it. They should have it on a sign like the rally people take, you know, the signs, and carry the little sign kind of like the small chalkboard that idiot Karl Rove always has, only just put the correct thing, like you said, and say, and quote, Senator Obama, or what, you know, which is correct spelling, Senator Barry, whatever you want to call the clown.
You know, I know. And we have things going on that seem so innocuous, and of course that fly under the radar, okay, that nobody ever sees. I've got one right in front of me. The Bureau of Labor and Statistics. They reworked some numbers here in the last couple of days. Because it seems that they recognize. Yeah, well, it seems that they got to looking at one of their charts and some of their stats, and they said, oh, crap, that's not good. And those stats were the data for revolving and non-revolving consumer debt in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed to begin tapering off around 2006. Six or so, we had this downturn, and what the original data showed is that Americans were really curtailing their revolving and non-revolving credit debt, and they were paying off their debts. So anyway, they revised this and magically created a $188 billion uptick in the graph, and that was all through student loan and car debt that previously evidently didn't exist or they missed. They went all the way back to 2006 and reworked the data from 06 to present.
Wow.
To come up with $188 billion in new credit on the charts, in the numbers, that prior to that evidently didn't exist. So they just created it out of thin air for the sake of cooking the books. I mean, my God, what the hell
are
we doing?
Oh, my God. It's pretty nuts.
When you talk about the debt ceiling and the fact that, you know, we can run things without increasing the debt limit, I don't think that people understand that from August 24th through November 15th, there is coming due. It's a bunch of treasuries that are going to mature, bond maturities, $441 billion.
My God.
Okay, in that time frame, $441 billion. And normally what they would do, and this is how the debt just seems to continue going, even if Congress isn't spending, what they do when that money comes due or when those bonds mature and they come due, what they just simply print new treasury notes.
Jesus.
And it's called a rollover. So they just roll that over, and they roll the interest and everything into these new treasury notes. But the one problem with that is you got to have somebody to buy those damn things, see? But not to worry,
right,
because the Federal Reserve is on the...
So...
...doing. Probably...
Ron?
Hard to hear him. Can you hear me, Robert?
I can hear you loud and clear, Linda.
Yeah, I'm not hearing him either. It's like it went blank. I don't know what happened.
Oh, man, Linda.
It's probably, yeah. I think it's the Skype thing, because he was on Skype, and it's been giving him fits. All the guys back east trying to do Skype doesn't work, so.
Okay. Will you want to take over until he gets back?
Yeah. Well, we can talk for a second. Like I said, hopefully they can hear us. I don't know. I can't see the chat room because I'm outside, so I don't know what's going on.
I'm not in the chat either.
Yeah, I know. But for I get a signal on my cell if I'm in my house.
I'm back in. I thought maybe
okay.
It was Robert breaking up, but evidently it was me.
Yeah. We lost
you.
There you go.
Up, Ron.
Well, you know, that's I kind of feel like I'm breaking up. I need a little Neil Sedaka music, you know. Breaking up is hard to do.
Believe me, I'm breaking up.
So, Ron, you know, when you're talking about all these, look, I kind of understand what's happening with the Federal Reserve, and, you know, I'm still learning. But this whole argument, it doesn't make sense to me. I mean, why can't they... Even with the Fed Reserve System and the fiat currency, why can't they do the MacPenny plan and try to stave off some of this nonsense and do some real cutting?
They're not going to cut. And here's the thing. It's not. It doesn't necessarily come down to an actual default. Okay, that's all
I know.
Spooky
I know.
Talk, you know. But that's,
Starbucks.
Of course, seeing how the executive branch is reacting and or conducting themselves during this
right.
quote-unquote shutdown, do you have any doubt whatsoever that they would actually encourage a default?
Oh, of course. No, he's – I know what he's pushing
He would
for.
Absolutely default because
yeah.
the last thing they want to do is cut spending back to 2006 levels. My God, that would be draconian.
It's crazy, Ron. I mean, I know. I know what they're trying to do, and they'll get it. It's just a matter of time if they keep this up.
Yes, Robert.
If they default, right? If they're going to go for default, does that mean that's what they're going to do? The new world order currency.
Well, I think your new world order would have China at the head of it, but yeah. And let's not forget, you know, that there are brand new currency, brand new $100 bills that are waiting to go into circulation, the blue notes that they were talking about. You remember the story, well, they're blue and gold. They've got a gold stripe on them on the $100 bills.
But you remember the story of the baggage handler at the airport in, what was it, New Jersey?
Right.
That snagged a stack of hundreds out of that shipment. And in the article, they say, you know, these were brand new $100 bills that are not slated to go, they're new notes that are not slated to go into circulation until 2014.
Oh, yep.
So this is a new series of notes, the latest and the greatest anti, and I think it's so funny that they worry about someone counterfeiting their counterfeit money.
it's pretty comical.
But well, you know, to me, the bigger question, and what more Americans ought to be asking, is if Congress has the authority to print money as well as coin money. I mean, if we just accede that, you know, okay, during the Lincoln administration, they printed money, and they did so out of the Treasury. Well, if Congress has that authority, then the question really becomes, why is it that Congress prints money, sells that money at cost, and then turns around and borrows that money at face value plus interest, placing the American people into debt servitude?
It's sick.
Quite literally, it would seem to me, if we want to believe that the Federal Reserve Bank is truly federal, well, why not just make it official? Let's federalize the damn thing. That way the government owes the interest to itself, meaning it doesn't have to pay it ever.
Right.
We can wipe that off the books. We have zero debt other than what's owed to outside entities, which is a small pittance compared to the overall debt that we owe to ourselves. Which is really the game that they're playing anyway, and that's why they say it's all semantics and that debt and deficits don't matter. It's just a matter of making you feel like you have an obligation to give the government back part of their monopoly money.
I know.
Otherwise, they'll just... I read a great quote attributed to Vladimir Putin. He said that negotiating with Obama is like playing chess with a pigeon. The bird knocks over all the chess pieces, craps on the board, and then struts around as if he's won the game.
You want to hear the follow-up to that, what Terry Rowland said? She says, I would prefer the pigeon as well, because it's the pigeon is better looking and you can have it for dinner.
Yeah,
I love
and,
that.
And pigeons are certainly not as full of crap as the current administrative executive.
Curtin Queer in Chief. I hate him. Oh, God.
Now let's not be unchristian.
I know.
It's a pretty strong word. We have to pray for a president. We should be praying for a Congress. We should not.
You know what I
remember?
Pray? I pray that every night he takes the evil ones off my shoulders so I don't have to hate them. You take them from me, Lord. I can't take it anymore. That's what I tell him. Take it from me. I can't.
Now, you know, we were talking a little earlier before the show started, and Mr. Rod Luke was talking in our chat room. Oh, no, it looks like Mr. Rod had to cut out. About the truckers moving into D.C. on the 11th. God bless them. I was reading today that their plan is to surround D.C. on I-495 three wide, three lanes wide, and encircle the whole damn thing with tractor-trailers. And they said, if you don't have their slogan on your car, good luck. They're going to leave one lane open for emergency vehicles. And they said, if the police try to interfere, they're just going to lock the brakes down and shut it down. And it kind of...
I love it.
It kind of struck me, and it reminds me of another time in history where a capital city was besieged, surrounded, and those that were assailing the capital city, they built a wall outside the wall of that capital city
so that anyone trying to escape would escape into a wall, and there'd be no escape at all. And that was, well, that was in 67, 68 A.D., and the city was Jerusalem, and they were being besieged by Vespasian and Titus, the Roman Empire. And we know what happened. Jerusalem was utterly destroyed.
Yep.
And
it's gonna
how appropriate. It's going to happen.
I think it will be destroyed.
And, you know, and not to be too pretentious, but when it comes to Washington, D.C., they are absolutely disobeying their God.
Oh my goodness.
They are disobeying their king, I should say. They're disobeying their kings, plural, that is, we the people.
Well, yeah, because not only are we their equal, we're actually not their serfs. And
we're
they need to figure that out.
We are their superior.
I know.
Our servants.
And they are rejecting
their holy scripture, which is that Constitution.
And, you know, back in the 70s when everybody, you know, all the people just for kicks had CB radios, and the big truckers always have CB radios, and they used to have those songs about convoy. Well, on the 11th, I think, gentlemen, we got ourselves a convoy. It's going to be cool. Yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, I was reading on there that their demands, they're demanding members of Congress.
Good.
Go before a citizens' grand jury. That they just happen to be bringing along with them, and
I love it.
They plan on indicting every single member who has, according to the grand jury and the evidence presented, violated their oath of office. And I think that's
fantastic. Man, that takes about 9/10 and a half, right?
They're going to be there a while.
Thank God, I love it.
I want everyone to remember, and let's not let this go unnoticed. There were several different sources sending me information about what was it? Region 3?
Oh, God, yes. Oh, my God.
Which is the D.C. area. And that all of these things for Region 3 had to be in place no later than October 1st. You remember that?
Yep.
Take a look, ladies and gentlemen, at what's going on and what is or could be possible. You have supposedly a government shutdown. The streets of D.C. are more vacant than normal. And now you have this trucker strike moving in to surround them. And you have this information out there that all of these countermeasures, we'll call them, were supposed to be moved into place into D.C. by no later than October 1st. You know, it's a crazy time that we're living in. And I don't want to get the tinfoil hat out and you know, start adjusting my antenna just yet.
Well, Rob, what about the bikers?
Huh. Well, yeah, the bikers, they're already gone, and that's already happened. But, you know, bikers are one thing, and they certainly created a bit of a stir, and God bless them. But,
great.
But surrounding the entire outer loop, you know.
That's commerce, too.
That's a little different.
And that's a lot of commerce. And everybody who's a patriot is not going to be buying or trading on those days. No banking, no nothing.
You know, I wish we could get people not to just not buy and sell, but just not go to work on that day.
Oh, my God, wouldn't that be awesome? Wow.
Because there's some corporations out there that need to see it as well, but... Not that it's going to really have an impact on their bottom line, because it won't. But,
well, you know, when we talked Are you still there?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. We talked also about the economic situation and the impending meltdown. I think it was, I couldn't remember the guy's name, but now I do. It was David Bruckner, and he's an economist, and he was talking about what you guys have talked about many times, the uptick in the interest rates, which could cause one of the biggest collapses in history. And I think Karen Hewitt has talked about this as well. I mean, a lot of people are talking about it. Now, some predictions are October 2014, January 2015, that this is all going to hit. And once those upticks happen, that collapse of the dollar and this mayhem will happen within 3 months. That's what you've got before the anarchy hits in the street. So I've been preparing like crazy this whole week.
Well, there's a lot of different ways this could go down. But again, if we go back to that article I was talking about earlier, it seems to me that there is at least the appearance of a viable option for Obama to circumvent the debt limit. And there's not much they can do about it without a two-thirds majority disapproval.
Right, right. So, okay, when you look, even if he gets his way and there's not enough people to vote against him or on that instance, and this keeps going and they keep pushing this bubble to make it bigger, there ain't nothing even the Fed can do to stop it once it goes.
Well, I agree. I think no matter what path is taken, okay, I think what's going on is it's just semantics, really. What's being played out right now is largely semantics. It's for appearances and, you know, who can proclaim victory in
the
United States of America.
who's going to take credit for all that, I'll tell you. Anyway, what I'm looking at is, if I can get the commodities and the silver that I need, et cetera, and I've been looking at where I've been pricing everything out, picking up everything I need, you know, if this goes down and there's no real reset real quick, like the little blue notes haven't been passed out yet, you know, or exchanged, silver eagles are going to be pretty much worth what I say they're worth, you know, and the person I'm trading with thinks they're worth. But that's the way I've seen it. I mean, if it's that kind of, you know, but down to barter, real barter, you know, without the middleman.
I mean, you know, regardless of which way we go, we know it's just a matter of time and a short amount of time, actually.
Right.
And I wanted to, you know, before I'm out of time, I want to read you a little something that is going on. And I think people need to be aware of this. And that is that China has been telling the Congress and Obama that they better mind their P's and Q's.
Good.
They need to do something about this debt limit impasse. Now, they are. And can you blame
them?
Okay, yeah. Can you blame them? I mean, let's be honest for a moment. If you were a stockholder in my company and you held, you know, $1.5 million in stock in my company, and I was doing something that was putting that stock in jeopardy, don't you think for a moment that you would be calling me up and saying, hey, you dumb dip, I don't know what you think you're doing, but you better get your head out of your butt or I'm going to dump all my stock before you tank it.
Mm-hmm.
World's largest hedge fund, the Fed, may not care about the performance of its bad assets, and thus is largely ambivalent to the U.S. Treasury defaults on the $2 trillion in U.S. paper held by Bernanke, others don't have the luxury of merely printing away any incurred mark-to-market losses.
Mm-hmm.
China Daily Vice Finance Minister Zhu Gango warned that the clock is ticking, quote, to avoid a U.S. default that could hurt China's interest and the global economy.
Wow. So have we not seen with like India, China, and Russia and Iran trading for oil with gold?
Certainly.
I mean,
certainly.
You know,
and, you know, there's another one today.
one of those oil-producing states, Azerbaijan. I'm sure I'm not pronouncing that correctly, but they have moved to get out of U.S. dollars and move into foreign currencies in exchange for their...
I'm doing the same thing. I'm buying as much damn silver as I can get my hands on.
And how can you blame any of these countries? And again, you know, I'm not, and I know sometimes it gets misconstrued, and perhaps it's because I have a bitter view of things at this point, but I think it's a more pragmatic view of things. I'm not blinded by some stars and stripes sense of patriotism that I can't see the reality of what our government has been doing.
What's going on?
And the bad effects of our dollar reserve hegemony has had on other nations around the world.
Oh, it's, look, not only has it screwed our free markets up, it's got its tentacles where it don't belong, as the founders warned against, you know, and it's been doing it for how long now? 150 years? Oh, it's easy. So this is where we're at, and it took this long, you know.
I'm sure there are, and I'm sure there are plenty of folks out there that'll just simply parrot the, you know, I'm the blame America first crowd, but that's not really true. And I don't blame the American citizens. I don't blame the American troops, you know, in the field and the guys that are out there just doing their job. But I do hold accountable our government, and that is the America that I'm talking about. And for decades, we have allowed, we've been, let's face it, let's take responsibility. We have, as citizens, been derelict in our obligation of holding our government accountable.
Yeah.
How in the hell we accomplish that, I've not yet figured out. If I ever do, I'll let you know. you know, certainly the ballot box, but it hasn't been effective. But, you know, we've allowed ourselves, we have allowed ourselves to be induced,
and
enticed, entertained.
Yeah. And we've got all these horrible programs that no one wants to give up, so we've allowed ourselves to go down this train, and now we find ourselves at the place where that voting ain't going to get you nowhere. We're looking at, you know, if you don't start building gallows and doing what the truckers want to do with the citizens' grand jury, it's over. I mean, you might as well just say, okay, FEMA camp, Stalin, take me in. I mean, that's what's going to happen, and I know it will. You give these rat bastards 1 inch, you know where they're going.
And we have to look at things, I think, pragmatically. Look, there are huge entitlement programs out there that I absolutely oppose. Okay?
Me too.
But at the same time, those programs represent human beings. I don't agree with, you know, appropriating money, robbing Peter to pay Paul, I think, is counterproductive, and we're seeing the benefits of having done so, you know, the war on poverty, the Great Society, and all of this, you know, Social Security is another one. The problem is that we have created for ourselves a gigantic mess, and it's not going to be a simple solution.
Cleanup problem.
To work
our
way out of it, but the only way to get out of this problem, it's going to require some effort. It's going to require work, and it's going to require, and I hate to use this because it's so damn cliche, but it's going to have to, it's going to require some shared sacrifices.
I hear that.
You know, I am by no means a heartless, callous individual that just wants to cut everybody off from all government funding and kick their butts to the curb. As much as that, you know, would thrill me to death, I also recognize that it would destroy people's lives and it would create so much chaos. There's got to be a way that we can work our way out.
I agree. Because you can't go – look, because of the situation we're in, we don't have the option that Ben Franklin had when he went around and collected money for the first hospital in his town. We don't have that option. You know what I'm saying? This is so layered and so thick with garbage – and Keynesian Marxist nonsense and Fabian socialist crap and planned economy and planned everything else via Mussolini. How they, I mean, there's no way to do it. You can't flip a switch and turn it back like we'd like to. I mean,
well,
that would be great, but we can't.
Right, and I recognize that a lot of this doctrine, a lot of this ideology that led to many of these programs come from the very sources that you're talking about. If you truly are a study of history, and you go back, and you know I've talked about this on my show in the past, you can take this all the way back to Socrates, okay,
mm-hmm.
and Plato's Republic. And that's really the burgeoning, the bulwark from which many of these philosophers and social, you know, reformers have taken their ideas over the decades and the centuries, you know. I mean,
right.
Marx, Engels, and many others.
Oh, sure.
Hegel, the Hegelian dialectic, you know.
And the European Fabians. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Sure, the Fabian socialist. So much of this ideology is born from that work of Plato's Republic and the idea of the philosopher king. And, you know, this whole utopian ideology, that was one of the things that Marx really struggled with. What is that incessant beeping?
I don't know.
That's one of the things that Marx really, I think, it frustrated him. If you read, Das Kapital, if you read the Communist Manifesto, you can almost literally see or feel his frustration as he's trying to figure out how to transition from the state controlling everything into the utopian collective. And I think that's where he really, it doesn't work.
And I think
that's what frustrated him the entire time. I mean, people, the idea was not genuinely a Marxist idea. Marx didn't perfect the idea. No one's perfected the idea. He picked up a very old ideology and tried to perfect it, and it was pretty clear to me from reading his works that he was infinitely frustrated with trying every different conceivable angle that he could, conjure up, and he just never—you never could get there. It was a bridge too far, if you will. It always culminated in the state and what is socialism. It
or
never
tyranny.
Advanced into communism, and that's why I said there's never been a true communist regime.
No,
they've all been socialists.
They just differ over the terminology.
Word.
Oh, yeah, they just use different terminology. Absolutely. I mean, look, Lenin started that.
We're socialists, aren't we? We're on.
Oh, my God. I think we have been for a long time.
It's fascism. What we're living under today.
Corporate fascism.
And what has been permeated. That is the definition of fascism, is the marriage of corporate and government, we've seen that. And that actually came about, that was the wet dream of the Federalists. That was the wet dream of Alexander Hamilton.
Alexander Hamilton.
Of Henry Clay. And it culminated, it had its absolute pinnacle, its birth in the Civil War under Abraham Lincoln. It was the ringing in of what they called it in those times was British mercantilism.
Right.
And the idea was that you had a strong central government, and all revenues would flow into that central government, and that central government would use those revenues to establish internal improvements within the union. My God, go back and read what the founders had written and why they already knew that this was a bad idea. It resulted in massive corruption. Almost none of the projects were ever finished, and the ones that were never delivered what they were supposed to deliver. You go back and look at the times, there's a series on AMC called Hell on Wheels, which is about the railroad era. And, that era, the Reconstruction era, was the culmination, the absolute pinnacle of fascism or the British mercantile system that was envisioned by these guys. We had all this money being doled out in Congress, chartering railroads. You had a national banking system. So you had created this huge system where all this money inflowed into the capital, into VC, and then in turn was paid out through, I mean, it was just disgusting the amount of absolute corruption.
Exactly. Now, my question would be, why was James Madison so pro-personal property, individual personal property rights? I mean, he was one of the authors, but he was adamant. I mean, there's two pages of him going off on that. So,
well, certainly, and that's the thing that kind of, to me, is the is kind of an anomaly, because some of the things that you read that Hamilton wrote as well, you know, either he was just full of shit and really good at convincing you that he wasn't a fascist at heart. And he was. He was very, you know, from all accounts, at least. I wasn't there, so I can't tell you for certain. But reading his speeches, the guy was a silver-tongued devil. And so you talk out of both sides of your mouth, and that's nothing new in politics.
One thing that I did agree, because he was one of the major authors, being Publius, when he said, I wish he would have just stopped when he said this, because that would have been all it would take, that any law that's passed in this land that's unconstitutional is automatically null and void, and that would have helped.
Well, and it is true, but the problem that was left undone, I believe, in our Constitution was that, you know, they didn't lay out specifically means for determining whether or not a law was constitutional in such simplified terms as we could understand it today. Clearly, there is a method for doing that, and that lies with the states and with the people respectively, not with a single Supreme Court with 9 justices. But, hey, you know, the precedent is that.
Okay, what I understood was way back in the time when they formed the three branches, this was very, very, they were very adamant that Supreme Court was to be the least effective of all three, the least important of all three, and have the least power. So
one of the main functions of the Supreme Court was to act as a court of last resort or a court of first resort in some cases.
Right.
But they were to be an impartial judge, in particular in matters arising between a state, which is a corporate fiction, and an actual human being, up until the 11th Amendment, which we've talked about, Chisholm v. Georgia is the case that prompted that, the 11th Amendment made it a state and a citizen from another state. Because what happened in Chisholm v. Georgia is the case went directly to the Supreme Court, which Georgia was pissed about because they saw the federal court judiciary superseding the authority of the sovereignty of the state of Georgia, because Georgia does, in fact, have a state Supreme Court. So the state Supreme Court never got to hear the case. It went direct to the Supreme Court. And so the 11th Amendment was hurriedly passed, ratified, and put into place so that it was not allowed exclusive or original jurisdiction of the Supreme Court in cases that arose between a citizen of a state and the state that they were a citizen of. So they put in that little admonition.
I know you're running out of time, right? You're running out of time?
Correct. Yeah, well, you know, there's always archives, so I still got 6 minutes.
Okay. Well, if you've got more to say, I'm going to let you finish up and go back to the chat room, and thank you so much for letting me rant. Robert,
no
it was great
problem.
To hear your voice.
Okay,
good to hear
you. God bless you guys. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Good to hear from you guys both. God bless. You know, I just think that we live in very interesting times. And I think that every one of us, as difficult as it is, and sometimes increasing by the day, it becomes more difficult, we really need to make that extra effort every day not to descend to the level of calling these people nasty names and, you know, professing our hatred for people. We can certainly voice our displeasure at the situation and the lack of leadership of these people who are elected servants. I think we should hold them to account for their oath of office and the office to which they've been elected, and that's certainly our obligation to do that. But I think we can do that without voicing our frustration in less creative ways, I guess. Robert, any parting thoughts, sir?
I don't know anymore, Ron. I just keep trying to keep my cool and be safe and try not to write any more letters. I'm basically tired of fighting.
Well,
I can't,
don't lose
can't
heart.
I can't fight anymore. I know this is hard, but there's nothing more to say. It is.
Well,
it's just
it
the way it is.
I agree, and I do think that, you know, we're at a point. And I was going to make this point earlier in talking about, you know, not just dumping all these programs and throwing these people out on the streets. But I honestly and truly believe, and I have believed for some time, that, you know, we passed that point in our logistics long ago where we had the ability to politely and equitably resolve these entitlement programs and take the noose, the millstone of massive debt that has been hung around the neck of every American man, woman, and child, and remove that with the least amount of harm possible. I think we've passed that stage now.
Now that I look back at it, you know, my father always told me, never, never accept any monies other than from your family nor the government. Okay? He stressed that on my life. And he said, God, I never had to depend on the government. That must be an awful feeling to have to depend on the government. It must be awful.
Well, you know, I mean, it has to be, and I know people that feel that way, just a complete feeling of total helplessness.
Mm.
I mean, imagine your very life depending on the benevolence of some government program. My God, what a horrible existence.
I don't think I can live with myself if I ever did that wrong. I just don't. I mean, by rights, you know, I am a stroke victim, but I haven't applied for it. By rights, I deserve SSI, but I haven't applied for it, and I don't want to apply for it. You know, but.
Well,
you know,
I've got a new caller, Robert. I don't. 503, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. My name's Cameron Jefferson. How's it going?
Not too bad. What can I do for you, Cameron?
You come to see the fucking...
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought. Sorry about that, Mr. Robert.
What did he say?
You know, nothing worth repeating. God bless you for calling in. I got like 60 seconds left, guys. I want to thank everybody for tuning in tonight. And we've still got a few folks in the chat room. Yeah, I know. Last minute trolls, right? What can you do? I guess since the government is shut down, you know, some of our federal workers don't have anything better to do than call in. They call into the show and shout obscenities. That's awesome. But anyway... what can you do? There's one in every crowd. Guys, I want to thank you again for tuning in tonight. And keep your head up. Stay strong. You may have been Jay Carney. I don't know. Oh, Lord. Guys, God bless you. We'll see you all tomorrow night right here for the Hoot and Holler Show. And keep your head up. We're not done yet.
I hope not.
We're not
Be
done
safe,
yet.
Ron.
You too. God bless, Robert.
God bless.
Bye-bye.